director here, Paul LeClaire, who's the head of the library, continues to say he has the best job in the world, and I say, no, I do, because I still pinch myself every day coming to this wonderful library, which was started 12 years ago with a mission to help jumpstart and grow small to medium-sized businesses in New York. I understand that some of you may be here. Some of you may be here because of your connection to our speaker and or to the subject of the evening, to E. Murray. Some of you may be here because you have been alerted by the New Inventors Association of Manhattan. And I would just like to say, if there are others of you in the group who are interested in invention and have patents pending, our speaker tonight, I believe, has 10 patents pending, you should know that you've come to the right place, Sybil. We are a patent depository library. We give classes in patent searching. We have all the ancillary materials. And we are the largest technical public facility in this neck of the woods, having, for example, a complete run of the Compendex engineering database all the way back to 1898 and the original print literature that this index will lead you to. So please consider us your home away from home. If you're of a technical bent or if you have an entrepreneurial nature, like our speaker tonight, Sean, who started a computer company and sold it, come back to Sybil. I have to tell you a little bit about how this evening came about. We're happy to have Sean McGuire, who's the great-grandson of T.E. Murray here. And Sean came down from Montreal to speak to us tonight about his grandfather, great-grandfather. But why is he here? How did he get here? Because he was searching for material. He has a website, temurray.com. For those of you in URL land, and he was searching on the web, and we teach people at Sybil how to search on the web, looking under the subject of tonight's talk, under T.E. Murray, and he found reference to Joseph Cunningham, who has done programs here, got in touch with him, Joe Murray, Cunningham told him about the kind of work he does. Joe, how many talks have you given here on technology?
In the Power Series, separate from the Transit, the Power Series, it's supposed to be 5, and we kind of expand out to about 7.
Yeah, we do lots of technical talks here, so I hope this puts you on your radar screen for talks of a technical and scientific and engineering nature. Anyway, to make a long story short, we talked to Joe Cunningham, and Joe told him about this is the venue, and my colleague, Jackie Gold, who runs this series, invited him to come here. So that what I'd like to leave you with as you listen to Sean McGuire talk about his great-great-grandfather is that libraries today connect people not only to information in books and increasingly in electronic resources, but also to people. Libraries are about places and connectivity. Without further ado, I hand you over to our speaker for the evening, Sean McGuire. And thank you for coming.
Wow. The blue screen of death. I don't need a screen right now. I'm Sean McGuire and a great grandson of Thomas E. Murray. Really quickly, how many people in here are relatives of Thomas E. Murray? So welcome to the Murray family reunion. Hi. Hang on. See what you can do? I don't know about you, but in growing up, I heard a lot about my great-grandfather, Thomas E. Murray, and what a great inventor he was, and all of the wonderful things that he invented, and really nobody could in our family name any of the inventions. But he invented everything from the power plant right through to the light bulb. but that's as much as I was told. The problem, you know, with that was my family is, and I'm not, I don't know if I should speak for the entire Murray clan, but honesty is a bit of a commodity in our family. And what that means is that some of what I've been told has not turned out to be true. So, with the Murray stuff, it's like, okay, maybe he's an inventor. So I start searching a little bit. And, you know, we've got Google now, so I put in Google, Thomas E. Murray, and absolutely nothing came out. Tom Murray decided that the great Thomas E. Murray should be in the National Inventors Hall of Fame, because after all, he's this great inventor. Tom sent off the application, pretty well saying, worked with us and great guy, put him in there. And he got a letter back. Don't know him, can't find him, too bad. Okay, so this is getting a little bit worrisome that that Murray may not be what he was claimed to have been. And in the meantime, I started a computer company and I did a pile of stuff and we sold that company, and immediately after that, I started inventing things. And there are about 10 patents pending right now. Five of them for banking-related devices, another five for multimedia-type stuff. And which means that I learned how to do the patent thing, the searching, the writing the patents, submitting the patents, the whole nine yards. At that time, and in doing that and learning how to use all those tools, all of a sudden I had the tools to start looking around for what Murray did. And what Murray actually patented. The first indication that I got that this was actually true, that maybe there was a real patent back in there, is my cousin Lester. H. Lester Cuddy, the III, sent me a little envelope with a patent in it, with an actual patent from Thomas E. Murray. Holy crap, this is possibly real. Google did something very, very nice recently, and they came up with Google patents. And what that allowed me to do is put in Thomas E. Murray and Google patents, and finally, there's the beginning of an indication that there was something there. In his New York Times obituary, the New York Times stated that Thomas E. Murray had 1,100 patents, second only to Thomas Edison. It's crock. No, he didn't. He didn't have 1,100 patents, but you know, he's dead. We're not going to, you know, upset the family by saying, no, you're lying again. So part of my goal is to try to find out exactly how many patents this guy had and what he did and all of this stuff. The other interesting thing is we're hitting about the 100-year mark, right? Murray, born in 1860, died in 1929. The height of his inventions were about 100 years ago. So now, at the 100-year mark, we're in danger of losing any connection to Thomas E. Murray, his inventions, and everything else. And when that happens, it's gone and it's over. And we won't know. The information will be lost. We're lucky tonight because, you know, he created a pile of stuff, and the first generation makes it. The second generation hangs on to it. The third generation loses it. Can I see a show of hands of third generation Murray? And the fourth generation is really pissed at the third generation. Now, it's the job of the fourth generation to make it again. And so that's what's going on. Now, one of the questions I want to try to also figure out is why is absolutely nothing to be found about Thomas E. Murray in any sources. I searched the New York Times. New York Times, you know, this is a famous inventor. There are four references to him. Three of them have to do with him being dead. And one of them have to do with him being at a dinner honoring Thomas Edison on the 40th anniversary of the light bulb. So this is getting a little bit annoying. I'm just going to try to I'm going to look at my own PowerPoint thing, and you guys can imagine what it looks like.
So just here we go. Second.
What?
Oh, terrible technical problems. So,
another important thing that I need to talk about right now is Joe Cunningham. And Joe's an engineering historian. Any of you who don't know him, Joe, would you please stand up so everyone can turn their attention to you? Joe is an expert on New York City infrastructure and power plants and the electrical history of New York City. So I'm looking to find out information about Thomas E. Murray. I do a search, and what do I find? I find a reference to Joe Cunningham giving a talk here. And of course, there's no email address, phone numbers, or anything else for Joe. But I do find an obscure piece of email that went back and forth between him and someone else. I sent a note to the someone else. Say, do you know this guy Joe Cunningham?
Maybe two.
And he was happy to put me in touch with Joe. Are we okay?
Well, we gotta see first if we'll start that.
Okay. All right. I just sort of want to. Sorry to interrupt you. I mean, just go down one more here so I can. All right, we're gonna start on Thomas E. Murray and what he was doing. He was partners. His early life in Albany was horrible. Just terrible. He was one of 12 children, and three of them, two of the siblings died, and his dad died at the same time, essentially, you know, within the same year. At 9 years old, he had to go out and work, and he had three jobs at 9 years old, which I guess in the late 1800s was maybe normal, maybe not, but it was a miserable existence, and ended up working at the Albany Power Plant. The Albany Water Works, and while he was there, was noticed by.
Just a second.
Oh, you've got the. No, just a second. Yes!
What's happening here? Wait a minute.
There.
In your sleep mode.
Holy crap!
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Thomas E. Murray designed the power plants and the power that electrified New York City from 1900 to 1950. He did all of that. We can get a PowerPoint slideshow up. That's our claim here. Oh, there we go. All right. This thing on the right, which is pretty interesting, this cylindrical thing, is he built a steam engine. And those of you in the family have heard the story where he was looking in the window at a steam engine, and so he decided he would turn around from looking at this engine and build his own. So in the early, you know, just 1875 around that, he built a steam engine by hand, which is sort of an interesting thing. Big deal. Why is this important? Why is it a big deal? And why is it the one thing that Thomas E. Murray thought it was the most important thing he did in his life? Every piece of that steam engine, he machined by hand. He made every screw. He made every bolt. He made every little thing you see there. He actually fabricated himself. That's unreal. During the, you know. I'm beginning to wonder, right? In 1887, he goes to work for the power station of the Albany Municipal Gas Company. He was a lamplighter, and now they're going from gas to electricity. And in 1887, he also did something interesting. He married Catherine Brady. Catherine Brady was the daughter of Honest Dan Brady, a New York senator. So he was doing pretty well. Brady is an interesting fellow. Brady was a traction magnet. Now, I looked, again, Googled traction magnet. What the hell's a traction magnet? And, of course, there's nothing that says what a traction magnet is. And 100 years ago, it would have been obvious. Today, it's a little bit less obvious. Basically, anybody who makes their money from making things move. So rail systems and subways, that would be the traction side. He built Albany's first sewer system, built a gas cartel in Albany, streetcars, electricity, and gas, a partner with Edison, and at his death, his estate was worth $100 million. He was the richest man in the United States, and still today, he's the 60th richest guy ever. This was the fellow that Murray ended up working with. So that was a pretty fortunate thing. One of the problems I had was trying to figure out what the hell things were like in 1900, because things have changed a little bit. There were 855,000 telephones, 4,000 vehicles, 10 miles of paved road, and that was in the entire United States. Cars have a top speed of 8 miles an hour, which is generally faster than the traffic outside. Not too much population. The average income, $637 a year. You know, electricity was around, but it was only being used for trolleys and street lighting. And it wasn't what we expect today, where you sort of plug something into the wall. If you were rich, you had your own power plant in the basement. And cities had sort of small power plants that they'd use for, you know, lighting and transportation. And it was extremely expensive and owned by a lot of little companies. Murray came from Albany down to New York. By 1900, Brady was playing Monopoly in real life, and he supplied all the power and light to Brooklyn. And then they came and did the same thing in Manhattan. Murray was put in charge of consolidating all these tiny little electric companies and making them all work together, while at the same time having a huge increase of people wanting electricity and needing electricity. What he did is, like I said, from early 1900s, he designed and built the power plants that powered New York City for the next 50 years. So Joe is the expert here, so if you want any specific information about each of those power plants, Joe can tell you, you know, everything about them. And but they're listed here, and I'm going to be posting this talk, by the way, on temurray.com. So if you want to use it as a reference, it's going to be up there, and it's just nice to have. After consolidating all the New York stuff, in the early 1900s, Murray really started to become an inventor. And I went through the same thing. I did the company thing, made enough money to be able to start thinking pretty well independently, and all of a sudden I started patenting. So Murray really started patenting around 40. And that was the big surprise. It wasn't like Edison had been patenting for years and years and years. Murray started at 40, died at 68, and in that period had at least 462 patents. And those are the ones that we can access right now. In 1904, he formed a company, which is Metropolitan Engineering. And that was basically, he moved from building and creating these power plants to the consumer side. To what can we do with this new electricity stuff? And popularizing it and finding new uses for electricity. One of the first things, electric signs. Oh my God. So, in the early 1900s, Broadway was full of Murray electric signs. And he had the same patent attorney for 20 years, which was really nice. Hang on. There. If you're a member of the family, you have seen this picture. And if you haven't seen this picture, it's terrible. And the reason I'm saying that is, there's Edison, there's Murray, and there is Brady's son, Nicholas F. Brady, in Murray's office. Now, what's important about that is, here's Thomas Edison in Thomas E. Murray's office. Anytime I go somewhere, if I go to somebody's office because I want something. So now, obviously, Edison wanted something from these guys and was there. So that's an interesting, interesting idea. Again, this is from Tom Murray sent this to me. Obviously at the same time. You know, they're looking at some device that that Murray created. And I'm not sure if this is exactly the same time, but it's going to be awfully close. And there, yes, T.E. Jr. Again, Brady, Murray, Edison, Walter P. Chrysler. Was that Uncle Jack? Did you scribble on that picture? And J.B. Murray over here. A little bit of background out about residential electricity. Murray got the Longstreth Medal of Merit from the Franklin Institute, which they no longer give out, and you can barely find any information about that. But it was for safety devices and protective appliances for interior electric wiring in 1910. Why is that a big deal? It's a big deal because in 1910, you know, less than 10% of residences had electricity. You know, and it was extremely expensive. So this is where the big growth happened in electricity, and Murray decided that's the part of the world he wanted to be in, and it was the place to make money. This is the family. We could probably go through and point at each one and see who's a relative of who. You know, but Murray actually looks pretty happy in that picture. Great-grandmother Murray looks considerably less happy. You know? My grandmother is there. And she actually looks pretty scary. Poor Murray died. I mean, and I found it interesting that the flags on the Waterside Power Station were lowered to half-mast on July 21st. And he had some quotes that were really nice. I like the let me tackle the job which the other fellow says cannot be done. And when charity is accompanied by publicity, it's not charity, it's advertising. Because Murray was an awfully good Catholic and really extremely generous. Eight children, 38 grandchildren, an estate valued at $10 million. If you notice, the estate was valued at $10 million by the family, and it was valued at $14 million by the IRS. And he died right after the stock market crash in 1929. Before. Sorry, you're right. Just before. So this... Oh, I want... There we go. Okay, at this point, I'm just going to go through some Murray's patents, finally. And one of the things I heard is actually read in his patents was this phrase, and I like it a lot. It was, my invention aims to provide a certain proof type of apparatus of great simplicity and efficiency. And that sums up his inventions. In reviewing all of Murray's 462 patents, the one thing that really shines out is the immense simplicity. If it is complicated, it is not a Murray patent. He did not have the capacity to create complicated devices. He took a lot of simple stuff and put it together in very new, novel, different, effective ways. But they were all very, very simple. The first, the electric sign. If you take a look, it's 1901. And these lights move back and forth along rails, and you can make letters, numbers, whatever. So all of a sudden you could see lights in your name up in lights on Broadway, thanks to Murray. You might be familiar with this, a screw and fuse. Those of you old enough are used to a screw and fuse. You just screw it right in, that's it. 1913. The light socket. again, looks familiar. It's exactly what we use today. What is interesting here, and again, Joe Cunningham is the expert, socket for electric glow lamps, a very, very small change there, and what the electric glow lamp would be is a decorative little light, otherwise known as a Christmas tree light. So, sockets for Christmas tree lights in 1913. These little brick things, the little brick thing was allow you to run wires into buildings. As part of the electrification, you know, you've got to get the wiring, you've got to get the electricity into the building, and he was in the middle of that. This is the one that everyone's heard of, the first environmental patent, really, just about in 19. He wrote it in 1914 and patented in 1915. It trapped particles of soot in water. And the story goes that he was traveling on a train, a bit of ash got in his eye. His eye watered. He said, wow, that's really cool. And did the same thing, except on a larger scale for smokestacks. So the smoke would go in there, hit essentially a wall of water here, be trapped down there, and the smoke would go out there without all the crap and soot in the air. This is an interesting patent, and the reason I find it particularly interesting is because I don't think it can get much simpler than this. Here's a sheet of metal. Sheet of metal with hole in it. And he said, great, you know, so we can attach tubes this way. We take sheet of metal, we put hole in it here, we bend the little hole upwards, and voila, we have a flanged metal tube, and he was able to patent that. Ditto, pipe coupling. You want to hold two pipes together? Screws on both sides, thingy in the middle, there you go. But having a patent on that is pretty interesting, because anybody who wanted to put two pipes together would have to talk to Mr. Murray. One of the most interesting things that he did had to do with sheet metal. And before his work with sheet metal, people would generally either, you know, bore things out of metal or mold them or something. What he found he could do is he could take these pieces of sheet metal and stamp them into whatever shapes he wanted. So he would take something that would have been in the old days sort of made out of a solid block of metal, and he'd say, hang on, I'm going to take that thing, cut it in half, create two halves, stamp two pieces of metal with those two halves, and weld them together. And so he has many welding patents. Many, many welding patents, but they all follow the same principle of take something, chop it in half, make two pieces out of it, you know, stack two pieces out of it, and weld them together. And that was just brilliant. So there are probably 50 patents related to that sort of stuff. Ditto here, here's a valve. Very, very simple stuff. Chops it in half, makes it a mold, squishes it together, voila, a valve. But what happens? He's taken the price of these valves probably and cut them in a tenth, because you don't need all that time and material, just chop, squish, and weld. So huge, huge jumps in efficiency. Most of the family members know that Murray also had a radiator business, Murray Radiator. And this is a radiator, it's a simple thing. He patented it, and he was also responsible for the radiators in the Chrysler building. So he did this stuff, but he did it on a big scale. A dishwasher. In 1915. Those of you who ever worked in a bar would recognize this particular design is essentially unchanged. Where the glasses go there, they spin around, and the water happens over there, and they come out cleaner. I was surprised. Tire chains? He has many patents on wheel-related things, you know. First removable wheels, disc brakes, all that sort of stuff. A lot of the patents I chose the patents because they were easy to look at. A lot of them are sort of complicated and tough to talk about. So the ones I've selected are basically as simple and easy to look at designs. This is my favorite. Electricity was pretty new, right, in 1912, and it was the fashion of the day that people would take light baths. And he went into the light bath manufacturing business.
Light baths?
Light baths. Light baths. You sit there, you look really strange in 1900. And the lights would be there. And you would sit there with your head sticking out and be radiated by light.
Like a tanning bed, right?
It's like a tanning bed. You didn't tan you or anything. It just. But because they thought it was good for you, and you know, ships like the Titanic had it. It was very popular. I don't know how long it lasted, but and probably until people figured out it didn't do anything. And this is my favorite one. 1928. Thomas E. Murray created a vertical parking system. You know, where look at the car. There's the car. The car, the little elevators going up and down so that you could stack them up and park them. And I think there are actually some places that do that today. Problem, of course, this elevator parking thing. Well, patents are only good for 17 years, so, you know, it's a little early. He was too early probably to make any money off of that one. Now, why so quiet? That's my mom.
Grandma.
That's your grandmother.
Yeah.
And this picture was used by the Russians, saying, America, it's so terrible in America, they don't have money for shoes. thank you. Like I said, the Google search on Thomas E. Murray revealed nothing. And same with the New York Times. Why is that? He did a lot of stuff, you know. 462 patents is more patents than Westinghouse, than Tesla, than a lot of people. So, why so quiet? First, he refused to be called an inventor or a genius. Second, he didn't have to make a lot of noise. Edison needed to make a huge amount of noise because he needed to raise money to keep his patent business going, to build the next thing. My God. He needed to raise money. He needed to have a high profile. So a little like Donald Trump, you know, you make a lot of noise and people throw their money at you without thinking too much. He followed Brady's lead. You do a search on Brady, for the richest man in America at the time, there's absolutely nothing on him either.
No.
Absolutely nothing. Completely silent. The real reason is that Brady was such a political operator during the time of Tammany Hall here, that you really didn't want, if you were in the papers, it was a really, really bad thing. So they were very, very quiet. Everything was kept very, very quiet. You did not say a word, and deals got done. And the last reason, once Murray made a pile of money, his offspring became more interesting as they entered New York society. And a lot of them might have been drunks. And drunks are sort of fun. And so it was a lot more fun to talk about the social exploits of a bunch of drunken family members than this quiet inventor guy. So it's just human nature. You don't hear too much about Conrad Hilton, but you do hear a lot about Parasol. So it's very similar, except 100 years ago. And so that sort of explains that mystery. Please turn. Oh, great. We're almost done. We've got one slide left, and that's it. And this is the important one. Like I said, at the 100-year mark, we're in danger of losing the history of Thomas E. Murray. Even those of you who know, I'm sitting in a room full of experts, and I've made piles of errors here. And please, you know, correct me afterwards. The important thing being, I wanted to assemble all of his information somewhere. I know the family is set up. A lot of Murray's stuff is in the Albany Historical Society. How many people go to Albany? Oh, there. That, oh, it's great. You know, I,
my little. For the October Fall Color Festival on the railroad because it's level with the water and it's just gorgeous.
Well, there you go. Well, you got something else to do when you're there now. The thing is, it's really. And it's actually closed until May because I was going to stop in there. It's not an easy way to get information. It really is pretty painful. So what I'd like to do is get as much of that information as we can onto Thomas E. Murray's website. So it's cemurray.com. I've also put together a Wikipedia entry so that when people search the Great Encyclopedia, Thomas E. Murray shows up now at least. The nice thing about Wikipedia is anybody can throw in information and edit, and that means Joe Cunningham is going to add a whole bunch of stuff about power stations. The National Inventors Hall of Fame, I have a chip on my shoulder at this point about the National Inventors Hall of Fame. And we're going to submit another application because he belongs in there and he will be inducted one way or another. And education and outreach, and that's talks like this to let people know that this guy existed and what he did was pretty great. And that's pretty well it. That's it. I want to thank everybody for putting up with all this stuff. And I'll run through the thanks just because I have to. Jackie, for the great venue. Joe Cunningham, who for his Architect of Power manuscript, where a lot of power information came from. Tom Murray, who sent me the originals of the original photos and made the original Inventors Hall of Fame application. Tim Murray, who wrote, was probably the definitive thesis on the life of Tom C. Murray. Lester, who produced patent copies, got me started. My sister Mary Jane, who sent me the photos of the steam engine. Real Lace from Stephen Birmingham. We grabbed pictures from there. The interesting thing was sort of a copyright problem. If I took the pictures from the book and they were owned by my mother, who's got the copyright on that? A book called It's Getting Better All the Time, which showed the history of electricity. And some of the pictures of Edison Murray came out of the Smithsonian Institution. So, guys, thank you very much. Oh.